Today is September 21st, 2007. My name is Michael Rodriguez. I am the literature and film librarian for Michigan State University. I'm here with Jim Daniels, who's here to read for the Michigan Writers Series. Now, I always start with, because it's the Michigan Writers Series, something about geography in Michigan. And I think this is an especially... You're a Detroit poet. I mean, you've come to be known that the subject matter of a lot of your work is Detroit. So that's where I was going to start.
Yeah, well, I keep coming back to it. There's the novelist Richard Price said that where you're from is like the zip code of your heart, and I think that's really true of me in Detroit. It's a rich area for me in terms of my life and experiences there, and inevitably it shows up in my work again.
But you started out, I mean, you wrote poetry exclusively that I know of, and that's what you published anyway.
Yeah.
For a long time. And the subject matter, at least geographically, for a long time was Detroit, a lot of it anyway. I was just going to ask you, you know, who do you think are the great Detroit poets? Were you thinking of, or were you reading other sort of Detroit people specifically when you were thinking of Detroit?
Oh, you mean when I started writing?
Yeah.
No, I have to admit I was actually ignorant of somebody like Phil Levine that people bring up right away. Mm-hmm. I didn't know he existed.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Until when?
Until graduate school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then I was kind of amazed.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a couple of poets who I think aren't from Detroit that sort of turned me on to various things. But Levine was the first poet that I had a sense of that was identified with Detroit as a place. It's interesting because there are other poets from Detroit who choose really not to write about it in a way. Somebody like Carolyn Forché mm-hmm. is from Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Marge Piercy, mm-hmm. also, who, you know, very well-known writers who rarely, you know, explore that as a place.
Mm-hmm.
And then Larry Joseph, whose first couple books had quite a bit about Detroit, now really doesn't seem to write as much about Detroit. It's a matter of, I guess, your style and influences and growth as a writer. I think one of the things that I've done is, you know, moving from poetry into fiction and screenwriting is that I've experimented with different forms while still using some of the same material. And in some way that's helped keep it fresh for me.
You mentioned Levine, and I was thinking of him too. Levine is someone that hasn't lived there for a long time as well.
Right.
Of you.
Right.
So you're both expatriates. I would imagine Levine has had some influence on your work, if not just in having read him and understood, you know, what a great voice he is. And both of you look at Detroit in a kind of past tense.
Yeah.
You know, I just wanted to ask you about the idea of nostalgia and Detroit itself, which is, I think, the way that most people, writers especially, but filmmakers and fiction writers and so forth, they look at, and the way the people in Detroit themselves look at Detroit, which is nostalgically, and almost only nostalgically. They're always looking back. You walk into a bar or a restaurant, and there's pictures of Detroit. They're not current pictures. They're from the 20s, 30s, 40s.
Right.
You know, the heyday of the place.
Well, it's similar in Pittsburgh, where I live now. And they joke about people giving directions based on what used to be there in various
mm-hmm.
locations. And, yeah, Levine's Detroit is of a certain generation. My Detroit is of a certain generation. And I think moving away allows us to, I think, create a more imaginative landscape sometimes. So sometimes people read my work and say, well, you know, that's not really Detroit. And I say, well, it's my Detroit. You know, your Detroit's mm-hmm. something different.
Mm-hmm.
And so my job isn't to accurately reflect the current state of the city, but to use it as a landscape for creativity in a way. I should say one thing about Levine, because he's been very supportive of me over the years, and we read together once at a bar in Detroit, which is a real highlight. The last time I saw Phil, we were at the Dodge Poetry Festival in New Jersey. I was sitting there with my wife at a picnic table, and Phil came up, and he had a camera with him, and he gave it to my wife, and I said, "Here, will you take a picture? I want you to take a picture of two Detroit poets." And for me, you know, I was in heaven. That was a great moment. And then he sent me a copy of the picture.
Nice.
So, he's really got a good-hearted guy.
What bar did you read at in Detroit?
Alvin's. It was a very raucous crowd, and his brother came, Phil's brother, Eddie, still lives around Detroit, and I had some family there, so it was kind of cool.
And Alvin's, I think, is open again, or at least it was for a while. It was closed for a long time, and then it reopened.
It was a great place to read in terms of audience interaction. And
it's response. A perfect stage for it, because you're not too high up, you don't feel too removed from the audience, but it's still a stage. it's an interesting place.
Yeah, it's great.
So now we're publishing short stories and films and writing scripts for films. We talked last night a little bit about how films have changed, perhaps, you know, your mind's eye for writing fiction and poetry a little bit. I was curious if you wrote the scripts that are for the two movies that have been made just to be scripts, or did they start out some other way? And you said, this is more of a movie.
Well, that's a good question. The first one, No Pets, was based on a short story I wrote called No Pets, which is in my first book of stories called No Pets.
Right.
And the filmmaker, Tony Buva, asked me, because he's from Pittsburgh, he's from a family of steelworkers, and he'd done a lot of documentaries about the steel industry, some great stuff, if you ever get a chance to look it up. And he wanted to do something fictional, and he knew my poetry, and said, "Do you have anything that we might turn into a film?" And I gave him the story, and he said, let's try and do this. And I had no idea how to write a script. So the first time I tried one was really with the encouragement of and help of a filmmaker, because I didn't even know how to lay out the thing on the page with dialogue and all that stuff. So what I did is I took everything out of the story that wasn't dialogue and then tried to build it back up. And that was really hard, to try and create scenes in which some of the internal stuff would come out. And I still think the scene in that film that works the best is the one that's closest to what was written originally in the story. Some of the ones I added didn't quite work out so well. The second one I wrote more clearly as a script, and sort of designed it that way. Actually more of a play, and I think if you see it, you see a kind of that could probably be transferred to a stage without too much trouble.
Well, that's a good question. What's the difference between a play script and a film script?
Well,
to you anyway.
Well, with film you can move around a little more, and you have the camera as an eye, and I think that connects more with poetry in a way. In terms of, I always talk about zooming in as a writer, and with the camera you can zoom in. Or if you're watching something on a stage, you really can't control what people in the audience are looking at. Somebody coughs, they turn their head. Everyone's on stage at the same time, and everyone's acting, but you're not focused always on who's speaking or whatever. But with a camera, you can really do that kind of action that poets try to do. They zoom in, they back up.
Dumpster could, you're right, it could easily have been a theatrical play. It's very theatrical, at least in the sense that almost everything happens in one place, either inside or right outside the dumpster. Everything else, all the other exposition could have come out around then, I suppose, as well. Did you ever think of trying that as a... Have you thought about trying drama?
I did a one-act play that showed off Broadway in New York.
I think I knew that.
Yeah. And I'd like to try it again. In fact, some of the actors in Pittsburgh who were in the film have talked to me about trying something like that. So, I'd like to give it a shot and try and write something longer beyond a one act. Maybe someday.
Are there more films that you have planned?
No. Really. The tough thing with films is the whole money thing. Even when you're just looking at 10 grand, it's still 10 grand. If I want to write a poem, I just start typing.
A lot of people are looking at film writers are looking for a payday, right? They're looking for, okay, if this novel or this whatever gets bought by Hollywood in some way, then ka-ching, I don't have to pay my mortgage anymore. we're not looking for a Hollywood sort of payday whatsoever.
No, I don't want to go that way. Well, I mean, if somebody started throwing money at me, I'm sure I would probably do something. But in terms of on my own initiative, I just know so many people. It's like instead of writing the great American novel, people want to write the great American screenplay. Yeah. In terms of the notion of the romantic aspects of that and the chance for the big payoff. But I know so many people with unproduced screenplays, and as a writer, I think if I do something and I do it well enough, it's going to see the light of day. Mm-hmm. But there's a lot of very good unproduced screenplays because somebody doesn't see it as something they can sell. So when you make it yourself, independently, that's not such a concern. As a poet, I'm trained not to make money. So.
Well, there's no really way that you could.
No.
There's no real way that you could.
So I don't expect to make money off the films either. Yeah. It's just a kick. I mean, it's a lot of fun working with the actors and the director and the sound guys and the musicians. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot of fun. Yeah.
So then this is a little bit of... You answered a little bit of this last night, which is... Now that you've made a couple of films, you've thought filmically, do you go back as you're writing fiction or poetry and have that kind of transitional, film language in your head? I mean, going from one image to another, the way that film works, is that working with fiction and poetry at all? Has that changed, I suppose, the way you think of things?
Well, it does. I've always been interested in narrative, and I think one of the things that has happened through working with film, at least partially, is working with simultaneous narrative. And it was a kind of challenge for me as a poet, because I tend not to use a lot of metaphoric language in my poems. It's not a choice that I made. It's just my style, I guess. I mean... They show up sometimes, and I'm glad that they do, but if you compare my poems to some other writers' poems, a lot of times you'll see that I don't use as much figurative imagery. A lot of it's just, but a lot of it's literal imagery. And so a lot of my revision is spent on honing things down to just get them as tight as possible. So I had this idea that, if I have two stories going on at the same time in a poem, I can create the same kind of energy you get in a simile or metaphor, where you're comparing two things that on the surface don't seem alike, but you put them next to each other and you create this energy and insight. If I take two stories and try and tell them at the same time and move back and forth between them, maybe I can create that same kind of dynamic. So that was one of the impetuses that drew me to this, writing poems that have more than one narrative going on in them. And I think some of that came from film. And I've been working with a photographer, too. I have this book called Street. That's my poems and Charlie Brodsky's photographs. And in fact, her photograph is on the cover of Mr. Pleasant, my new book, Short Stories. So I'm working on a new project with her. So the idea, I think film also opened the door to working with other visual artists and kind of riffing off of their work. Because I just like collaborating. Just anything to keep me fresh and to force me to work hard in terms of seeing things in new ways.
So was that the reason why you started doing other things than poetry? Just to keep it fresh?
I think so. There was Václav Havel, the playwright and former president of the Czech Republic, there was a book of interviews with him that I read. It's called Disturbing the Peace, and in it he was talking about being a writer, and he said, And Ryder reaches around age 35. This is the age he used in the interview. He has to decide, has a crucial decision to make. He can either keep repeating what he's done up to that point that's got him the success that he's had, or he can take a crucial step into something new. I was around 35 when I read that, so I got the idea. And so I saw it as a challenge. I printed it up and put it above my desk as a quote to inspire me to keep trying to push myself in new directions. And I think going into different genres has been that kind of a challenge. I think you all, as you develop a career as a writer, you're always risking self-parody. And I'm not saying I've never fallen into that myself, but I think I'm aware of it, and I think changing up like that might help keep me from falling into being too predictable in a way, and saying, oh, well, that's a Jim Daniels move there or something like that.
Which is one of the things, one of the great things you could say about just looking this up, and that's a Jim Daniels thing. Right,
yeah, I don't know if anyone has ever said that before, but just in my own mind, being aware of, I just felt like I could continue writing the same kind of poem and maybe continue to get them published, but maybe I could do something a little more interesting too.
We got to get you up there, but just one last question: is Digger one person?
Digger,
and is he coming back?
Well. There's a whole new section of Digger poems in line for The Exterminator, which just came out from Wayne State. So he's back.
He's back.
But he's a composite. Yeah. There's a guy I worked with in the factory that had a hard hat that said Digger on it. And I really didn't know the guy, so it wasn't based on him. But when I was trying to name a character, I thought, hey, that's a cool name. Yeah, you can do a lot with that on many levels. And so.
Well, he seems like one person, but you don't know. You know, it's the second person that you're writing in, so it's hard. I mean, that could be. But you are thinking of one character that you've developed.
Yeah, yeah. I've been working with. It's fun to work with the same character over a long period of time. So he retires in the new section of poems. So he, watching him age and seeing the challenges that he's faced, and you know, he's based on a whole group of people back in the old neighborhood. Because the main thing I'm trying to do in those poems is to show how work affects life away from work. And that's what I saw growing up in terms of most of the fathers in particular on the block, they worked for one of the car makers. Mm-hmm. And when I started working in the plant, I started making connections and saying, oh, I think, I understand why they are this way at home because of what this work was doing to me. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.